You know who else I want to talk about? Ooh. John Bickford.
Oh, well, yes. Let's talk about John. Give me a second. John came from Utah to New York.
He did.
Yes, he did. Stuttered a little bit, you know.
He stuttered quite a bit. Yeah. Let me just say what I remember about him. Because that was the tail end when John was... He was still working at the gun site. Yeah. He had the horse and buggy. I guess he was one of the last ones in town to have and buggy, though. We'd take great joy in him.
Yeah.
He'd get a ride on the back of it.
Yeah.
And he'd come down to the middle of the brain and get his brain.
Yeah.
But I never saw him when he was white.
He was a nice looking guy.
He was.
Mm-hmm.
But he was friendly as hell to us kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He'd take us into his well, I call it a shack, because that's all it was.
Black on that
camera. Oh, Jesus Christ, so black in there. Yeah. And his plate would be sitting on the table just as clean as a whistle, but he cleaned it with the bread when he got to eat and never washed it.
Yeah.
He had the horse.
But that old horse was kept clean.
The barn was better than that.
Sure.
The house stunk like hell from the door.
Sure.
And black.
Yeah.
And I had never seen him when he was white. Yeah. He'll probably tell me.
I'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
Well, as I recall, John came to Middlefield from Utica, New York. What brought him here, I do not know. Other than the fact that it might have been that he came with a relative, a fellow named Clayton Slocum, and another guy, I don't know who the hell the other guy was. I heard of him, but I don't know. And Clayton Slocum came here, and he came up to Grant Fowler's farm, and he worked on the farm as a herdsman.
This is up on Powder Hill?
On Powder Hill.
Okay.
He came off a big farm, a big Jersey farm in Utica, New York, to go to work here for my grandfather, because Grant had purebred registered Jerseys, and so did Olimene Mills. These were the two most beautiful herds in this area of Connecticut.
Oh, they were beautiful, really.
And this is when Jerseys were a big part of farming, because they gave such rich milk for the cream that they needed for the butter and everything. So Clay came, and at the same time, John Bickford came, and they were related. But John was not a farmer. John had worked in industry in Utica. So he went to work in a gunsight shop. And he had the world's worst job. And he loved it. And that's how he got so dirty.
Let me ask you this now. Yeah. Did John ever marry?
Yes, he did. That's what I was stopping for, Shai. John came to Middlefield, and he lived next door to Harry Allen in the big old house that was there before any of those other houses were built. Just on the other side, on the east side of Harry Allen.
Oh, okay, across from Mickey's store.
Yes.
Actually, in Harry's backyard.
Yes. Now that house belonged to a Doan or Bailey or somebody. I don't know who it was. That's an old house. And been rebuilt 45 times.
Yeah.
John lived downstairs in that old building where perhaps you remember Charlie Way, Florence Way, and Gladys and Edith and Charlie Way. And
I'm thinking of Norman Way.
It's Norman. That's right. It was Norman Way's older family. See, he was an afterthought.
Norman what?
Norman, yeah. And they lived at that time where Zimmer lived, where the
Roy
store
lives there now.
Yeah, well, in that area. And so
they lived in Zimmer's house?
Sure.
Is that where they lived?
Yeah.
The Ways?
Yeah. Dirty. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Was it as dirty then as when Zimmer had it?
Oh, worse than dirty.
Are you kidding?
No, here comes your friend.
Okay, here we go.
So,
wait a minute, you know what I wanted to do? I wanted to put the date on here, Ken.
Oh, yeah.
23rd.
May 23, 1984. Ken and I are going to talk some more. Now we'll go.
We're going to talk about John Bickford.
Yeah, we're going to talk about John Bickford a little more. Well, John was a nice fellow. He came from Utica, New York, and the first I remember of him, he lived up in the little house, I mean in the big house next to where Harry Allen lives now.
Across from Mickey's store.
Yep, across from Mickey's store. And John was a quite a nice-looking man, except for...
Was he married?
Yes. Had a nice wife, and he thought the world of her. Oh, gee.
Oh, I didn't realize it.
Oh, yes, John, and she died when they lived in that house. And old John, oh, God, boy, he took it pretty tough. And she was a nice wife. And that's... up until that time, John had never been dirty. Oh, he was always a clean-shaven man and always went to work looking nice. And he worked down at the gun sight shop. And he had a dirty job. But after his wife died, he lost interest in everybody and everything. And he just let himself go.
That's right.
And then after he couldn't recover. I mean, he'd done it so long. But twice a year he got cleaned up. Yeah. Did we talk about that?
No.
4th of July and Christmas. Jack Dooley and several more up to the gun sight shop out in the hardening room had big tanks of water, some wood, some steel. So they'd clean out one of their wooden tanks and pretty good get the acid out of it so it wouldn't burn the hell out of them. And then they'd get some nice warm water going with steam in it and what have you, and put John right in the tub.
Well, he wasn't a very large man.
No, no, John was small. Yeah. And they'd go after him with scrub brushes. And how John would holler. God damn it all, you screw me, wiping the skin right off. You don't want these hollering like hell.
He stuttered, didn't he?
Yeah, oh, stuttered like hell.
Particularly when he got excited.
Yeah. And anyway... And the girls in the meantime, I mean, this was all prearranged. The girls in the office, where there was a steady population or a steady crew, I mean, the girls never changed it up there.
In their 100 years.
They all chipped in and bought John a complete outfit. Shoes, socks, underwear, everything. Shirts, maybe two or three shirts and a couple of pairs of pants. And then they'd get him, and then Jack Dooley gave him a haircut after they got him all washed up. And they'd go up in the office and get the new clothes and bring him down and dress him downstairs. And then John, they'd send him up to the office, and John would walk through the office, Jesus,
proud
as a peacock. And he was a nice looking old man.
He wasn't offended by this, huh?
Not at all, Christ, no. He, as long as he didn't have to spend the money, he didn't care. And that is another thing that I want to talk about. John was no dummy.
Well, I think what we got to say on the tape here is John didn't like to wash. I don't know whether we got that across.
Well, he just became slovenly because he lost his wife and he lost all interest in the world. He didn't care about anybody else. The only thing he cared about was her.
Yeah.
And his horse.
But not only dirty, he was dirty to the extent that you would think he was a Negro.
Oh, yeah, he was black.
Black, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, just not just dirty, he was black.
He was black,
and his pants would shine. He was dirty.
Oh, yeah, sure. And his clothes were just hanging on him. And yeah, he wouldn't, I don't know whether he slept in his clothes or what he slept on, but
we were growing in his house as kids.
Yeah.
Of course, growing right up in that neighborhood. I want to get to how he happened to go from there down to where he was, too, where he lived in a little shack. At August, I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
And that's where we would visit him.
Yes. Well, after his wife died, he had to get out. I mean, he didn't, want to live there alone, yeah. And I don't think he could afford.
We got too many memories there, too.
Yeah, and I don't think that John didn't see the need of spending all that money for rent.
Yeah.
And there was building that he was in was the old paint shop.
Paint shop
for the blacksmith shop for Carr. No, Carr. Carr, yeah.
Was that his name? The blacksmith?
Yeah, blacksmith was Carr. C-A-R-R. And he raised a family, lived in a pigeon, where the pigeon farm is.
Turning's
place. He lived there and what have you, but he was a wagon maker as well.
Carr.
Right. Yeah. Or was it Card? I think it was Card. C-A-R-D.
Okay.
They were friends with my mother and father and Myron, because they all played cards together. And what do you call it? And he had after the wagon was built, whether it was a carriage or a wagon, it was taken out into the paint shop. And there it got 14 or 15 coats of varnish.
Yeah.
And it had to be dust-free, where they could shut it up tight, where there was no dust.
Yeah.
Because that varnish was bad stuff. Well, John moved in there, and of course it was kind of dark in there when he moved in. And he didn't improve it any with the smoke.
Well, he never had any electricity either, did he?
Yeah, he had electricity.
Did he have electricity?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I can remember the kerosene smelling.
Yeah. Oh, that was heat.
The heat.
Yeah, he had an old oil stove. Do you remember the oil stove? I think your mother had one or your father had one down cellar. They used to cook the booze on down there.
It was a double kitchen.
Yeah.
Two burners.
Yeah.
Smoked like the son of a gun.
Sure. Well, that's what John had at one time.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that place became available. And John, at that time, also took over the delivery of the mail.
Okay. Now, how old would John be when his wife passed away, roughly?
Perhaps 40.
40. He was a young man then.
Oh, yeah. 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 He had no children.
And Carr? I'm trying
Carr.
To...
Card was Card. His name.
Ran the
blacksmith shop.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to, and I got the Naomi Tate. What was her maiden name?
Clark.
Didn't he run the blacksmith shop?
Yes, he did.
After Card?
Yes, after Card got out, Clark took it over.
And Clark lived in that house also?
Yes, oh yeah. And I bought it from Clark.
Oh, you did? You lived there too?
Yeah. No, I never lived there.
You just bought it?
I bought it and sold it to Turning.
No, you sold it to...
No, I didn't. I sold it to Turning.
You did.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't buy it from Clark then.
I bought it from Clark.
Because Robinson was
there. Oh, Clark sold him a piece of land and he built that little house over there.
Mitchell.
But, yeah, Mitchell, but he didn't have nothing to do.
Robinson lived in that little house.
Wait a minute. I am incorrect. Robinson rented the house from Clark.
I see. Okay.
For a long time until I bought it. And then in the agreement was that we would give him, half an acre or more of land. Clark said that he couldn't throw him out,
I see.
He said he's been a good tenant, can't throw him out.
Yeah. And Robinson built that
And Robinson house. Built that little house. That's correct, Si. And you corrected me.
But you bought it just, as an investment?
Sure.
You never lived there?
No, I never. Didn't intend to.
Uh-huh.
But it was cheap.
Yeah.
I won't go into figures too deep, but I think I paid Clark $3,200 for 3 acres of land
in
the house.
In the house. And the barn, too.
Yep.
It was in good shape.
It was in pretty good shape.
Yeah, it's fun to hell, man.
Yep. I didn't do anything. I never touched it.
Yeah.
I collected from Robinson for about a year.
Yeah.
Until he got his new house built.
Yeah.
And then I kept it about a year after that. And World War II was on.
Mm-hmm.
and houses had already started to go up in price.
Yeah.
So I didn't make an awful lot of profit, but I made enough to double my money, and I figured that was good enough. So.
Don't grow with that, sure, sure. I didn't realize you owned that house.
Yeah,
now, I owned it. How did John happen to get down there?
Well, the blacksmith shop at this time was vacant.
Clark, so who owned that property?
Remember,
Algren is in there somehow. I don't know how Algren
bought it after.
He did.
Yeah.
So Clark owned
it. Clark was in there. And Clark took the blacksmith shop over after Clark got old and wanted to quit. Clark took it over. Clark was a good blacksmith, but a poor businessman. And he antagonized people, and it just wasn't, he just wasn't cut out to be a businessman.
Yeah.
And if he was busy and somebody wanted to see him, well, Jesus Christ, I can't be stopping work today. He said, you want to see me? Come when I ain't doing anything. He says, come tomorrow or next day. He said,
he wasn't thinking
I got work. Yeah, I got work to do, you know. And so he drove an awful lot of business away. But he made several beautiful coal trucks bodies.
He did.
For Middlefield Granite Coal. Oh, yeah, and for Meach and Stoddard's. These were the old high lifters,
yep,
you know?
Yep.
Clark.
He made the bodies.
He made the bodies, yes, sir, because I used to work for him as a kid.
Now, they didn't have any welding facilities.
Oh, no, no. The only way they welded would be put the two and they put a powder. I forgot what they put between. We get two pieces of metal, get them both hot, put the powder between them, and pound them.
They become one.
Yep.
That had to be a hell of a job.
Oh, yeah. But they were clever, those guys. And Clark made the bodies and ironed them all up. You know, the chassis came with the lifting frame all on it. Mm-hmm. All you had to do was put the wooden body on it, you know.
Oh, it was a wooden body.
Oh, yeah, wooden body.
Metal strap.
Oh, yeah.
I see.
Oh, hell, the body was more than an inch thick. I think it was 5/4 stuff, you know. Inch and a quarter. Oh, yeah, sure.
Old native.
And a lot of ash, too.
Yeah.
And so, Clark wasn't really a success at the blacksmith shop. He did good work, and everybody was satisfied with his work, but he was hell to do business with.
Yeah.
So Lyman came along about this time, and they had an opening in their blacksmith shop. They had a bigger blacksmith shop, more complete.
Mm-hmm.
So Clark took all his tools, and they offered him a job by the week and a commission on all the work that he did outside of their own horses. He didn't get any. You see, Lyman at that time might have had 15 pair of horses. So it was a lot of work to be done.
He was damn near full time with them.
Almost, yeah. But he did a lot of work, and he was a hard working man. Hell, he went to work at 6 o'clock and never come home till dark in the summertime. Never. So anyway, Clark went to Lyman's, and he was quite a success. He worked there for the rest of his life until he went to the Gunsight shop.
Well, he did go to the Gunsight.
Yeah, when he got old down there and horses were going, and there wasn't much work, and there wasn't much work for a blacksmith. And they sent him up to the Gunsight shop, and he was an inventor.
Oh.
We'll talk about Clark some other day. We'll leave it there. I want to finish with John before I forget.
Yeah, I'm going to write down. What was his first name?
Clark. Wait a minute. What the hell was his name?
Blacksmith.
Yeah, we'll talk about Clark some other day.
Yeah. All right.
because there's quite a lot we can bring in there. Well, anyway, after Clark got out, Card decided to sell that piece of land. And John Bickford bought it.
Oh, he did buy it?
Yes, yes.
I didn't realize he owned it.
He didn't own where the...
He didn't own the sand then.
No. Al Fowler owned that, and Allie Emmons.
Yeah.
Edie Emmons owned it.
Now, Al Fowler lived where? I'm getting...
He lived across the street from Frankie Milburn, that big old house.
See, I remember Irv Fowler.
Irv's
father?
Irv was son of Alvin. And Alvin built that house.
Okay. And well, he owned that whole piece then, didn't he?
Yes. Or almost all of it. He didn't own in back.
Oh, he didn't?
No.
Where the sand pit is?
Yeah. He owned part of the sand pit.
Yeah, up close.
But in the back, by the railroad tracks, the railroad had taken all that.
They did?
Yeah. The railroad bought the... bought the sand all out of there. I mean, the gravel. Oh, that was nice gravel. Yeah. All stones, you know, yeah. Beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
And the railroad bought that land, or leased it or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never used again. And there's still quite a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah. So John Bickford then lived in the paint shop, and there was a little barn there he kept his horse in. Was that another building that was there also?
That was that was the end of the blacksmith shop.
What was the end of it?
The end of
it went right out to the street.
Yeah,
the blacksmith shop.
Almost.
See, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it all
was gone.
Went out. Yeah, well, they took it down.
It was gone before I was around.
They were afraid their kids would get set it on fire. You
know?
And I might diverse here a little bit. I have a distinct memory of that blacksmith shop. My father and another guy, Henry Torrey, who lived where the garage is now, and connected to your property down there, what the house's name? Hank.
Hank Crandall.
Hank Crandall. Where Hank Crandall lives, that was...
it was Peabrush Camp.
That belonged to Elmer Camp. And Elmer Camp had a daughter, Doris, who married Henry Torrey. And Henry Torrey was in business with Turl and Burnham. It was Turl, Burnham, and Torrey.
Oh, I didn't
remember. T, B, and T.
We got to talk about that again. We're going to get sidetracked.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop right there.
And Torrey?
Yeah. And this is just an offshoot.
Yeah.
And they raised a hell of a lot of corn up and back there.
Oh.
And Pa had, at that time, we had chickens, and we also had two pigs every winter. We raised two pigs. So they liked the corn to fatten the pigs and to feed the chickens. They used to take it down the middle, down here, and have it cracked, you know.
And
feed it to the chickens. Well, it used to be Aaron Miller's, you know.
Yes.
But it was Middlefield Grain, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So they had to husk the corn. They just took it off the thing and they husked it. So my father said to me, and they, the Torreys had a boy, Edwin.
And he the Torreys lived where?
Where Elmer, in Elmer Camp's house.
Oh, they did live there?
Yeah, that was Elmer Camp's daughter, and they all lived in together.
Oh, okay.
And the Torreys had this crazy goddamn kid, Edwin Torrey, and he was a nice looking boy, but he was wilder than a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chuck Johnson, who is Billy Morrissey's son. Well, we won't go into that, but there were three.
I'll write down Chuck Johnson.
There were three or four of us kids that got around. And of course, it was more fun to have somebody help you, so
sure.
We had to make a deal, probably to let them ride our bicycle all 1 week if they would help us husk the corn, you know. So Mrs. Clark lived across the street, and it was kind of cold. This was in November, possibly later.
Yeah.
So we had the doors shut in front, and Of course, it didn't take too long husking the corn. That goddamn corn silk was an awful temptation. So somebody brought some toilet paper, and we roll up the corn silk in the paper, and we'd be husking corn, smoking a cigarette. It's a wonder we didn't burn the place down.
Now, you were, was there a barn there?
Yeah, this was in the blacksmith shop.
Oh, the
blacksmith shop. Right in the blacksmith shop. The part that was gone when you got around.
Yeah.
Except the shed in the back. And so all of a sudden, the damn door flew open. And my mother came in, and right behind that door was a horse whip, a full-size horse whip.
Now, your mother wasn't a big woman.
No. She could run like hell. She kept up to me all the way home. And she gives Chuck a whack with that whip, and only Warner, I think, he had a couple of licks, but she didn't care too much about them, it was me. And I started to run for home, see, and she after me. And she was whacking the hell out of me all the way, because she kept right up to me, you know. Oh, geez.
Now, this is when you were living on Jackson Hill.
No, I was living at the post office.
Oh, the post office. You got two fire runs.
Yeah. No, it didn't take me very long. Jesus, when I got home, I, of course, we had pants on.
But those buggy whips could
I had here. welts all over my legs. Oh, yeah. Jesus, up to as far as my ass. Oh, Christ.
You probably didn't smoke too much corn silk after that, did you?
No, I didn't. I tell you. So, anyway, now we'll get back to John. So old John
bought that property.
Had an opportunity to buy it, and he bought it.
Yeah.
John was not without finances.
But he wasn't.
No. He had something in Utica, I don't know what. And he came to Middlefield with money, anyway. I don't mean huge amounts, but
no, comfortable
for a man of at that time. Well, anyway, John bought it, and shortly thereafter they took down the blacksmith shop, because they had no use for it, and they was afraid that
somebody gets smoked by silk.
That's right. But not only that side, but the road that went in to get into the sandbag was right tight to that bank.
Yeah.
And you know, there was a bank ran up there higher than the building.
Right out front there?
Yes, sir.
See, I don't remember that either.
All right, you know, over at Joe Goodrich's there, you know how high that bank is?
Yeah.
Well, this was just as high, or higher.
It would go right across there?
It went right across all the way to old Al Fowler's house, you know, in the back of the barn, how high it is.
Yes.
And then back of Bigelow's house, Jesus, they took it
they
down.
They took a lot of that up for that, too.
Oh, yes, they took it down to be hell. Well, that's where
you...
it
was all...
Christ, that way, and it came right down like this. So it was difficult to get two trucks passing between the barn and that big pile of gravel.
Yeah.
And at that time, they didn't want that gravel that was out front because it had some clay in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they just didn't want it. But they were getting the stuff that was in the back. And they went down pretty deep before they got through there.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, so they took the old barn down, and John lived there until he died. And just before he died, he sold to Albert. That's where Albert came in. And the old man came here. He had made a battery terminal or some damn thing. But he became an impossible alcoholic, and he never did anything with it. I guess it was a good deal, not that he had.
I was talking to him one day, and he showed me.
Did you? Well, I never...
It was simple.
Yeah.
I've forgotten. I just thought it was.
Yeah. Well, anyway...
It was really a long in years.
Yeah. So,
So then, Auburn is the one that tore down John Bickford's barn. And
that's
built
correct.
Little house.
That's correct.
From the barn down and the shed
He burned it down, if I remember correctly.
Probably. Oh, it was black in there. Terrible.
I know, it's full of paint. You know?
Smelled terrible. Well, not in that, but I mean, filled.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I know. Well, anyway, Si.
So then John died. Did John have family?
He had a wife, but no children.
No children.
There were other relatives, and one of them was a guy named Clay Slocum, who came from Utica with him, and he came to work for my grandfather. He was a
farm?
Yes. He was not a dairyman, but a vegetable man, you know. A crop man.
Produce.
The produce, yeah. And they came up on the hill and they sold melons of all kinds, mushrooms and watermelons, yeah. And corn.
Did he stay on with your grandfather?
Oh, he stayed on until my grandfather sold out. Yeah. Then he went to East Hartford. Went to work at a tobacco farm.
Oh, so.
Yep. And so, there's only a couple more stories, but I want to tell you about John. John was not an ignorant man. He couldn't express himself because
no,
he stuttered.
He was so excited he would stutter.
But we were young and full of piss and not making any money. So we never had money enough to last from Friday till Friday, you know. So come along about Monday or Tuesday, we'd have to...
this is after the weekend.
Yeah, we'd have to borrow a little money from John. We'd say, John, can I borrow a dollar or two? And John said, yep. He said, you can always borrow money from me as long as you pay it back on Friday. So you borrow a dollar and it costs you a dollar and a quarter.
He was a loan shark.
Is John dumb?
No.
And John's loaned a hell of a lot of money. And I don't think that he very often got stuck. Maybe once in a while. Guys would run out on him, you know, they quit.
Yeah.
But John said, he says, I got to have a little interest. And we said, geez, we say, that's pretty high interest, John. And he said, that's all right. He says, I got the money and you have it. If you want it, you got to pay for it. Well, and then the kids all loved him.
Well, we did.
Everybody
we were
liked John Bickford.
Yeah.
And he used to go down once in a while, and I think, and this is pure speculation now, but John spent occasionally some time with Ellen Doyle.
Oh.
This
is speculation.
That's speculation. I don't really know.
Makes sense. They're right close by.
But John never denied it, nor did he admit it. We used to kid the shit out of him up in the gun sight shop, you know. Hey, how come you were down at Ellen Doyle's all yesterday afternoon? And John said, he said, I had a little washing I had out on.
Washing? Well, he's never had washing.
That's right. Well, anyway.
Well, that was kind of convenient. Were they the same age brackets, were they?
About. Yeah. I think John was a little older. But he apparently still good. So, anyway.
Yeah.
He went down to see Ellen.
Well,
and
had a little drink with him.
And he probably bought a bottle. Yeah, sure. I don't know where the hell he got it. It would have to be, homebrew or something.
Yeah.
But there was plenty of places that John knew his way around.
Oh, yeah.
And Ellen did, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ellen was going to town.
Sure. So, and then John, then we got to get back to the mail.
John would carry the mail.
John carried the mail from the train here to the post office down there.
Was this a daily run?
Twice a day. Yes. At one time, they got mail three times a day from here.
Pretty important.
Then they picked it up at the Middlefield post office. I used to have to go up and get the mail. They'd send me one little bag, first-class mail. Came at noontime.
You would come down to the freight station here?
No, I get it at the Middlefield station.
Well, that's right, in the center of town.
Yeah,
I just
walk up the street.
And the post office was in your
my grandmother's house.
Grandmother, where Bob Chazzy was.
Yep. And the train, if somebody wanted to go to Middletown, they flagged it. There were flags in the station.
Yeah.
And you just flagged it, and when he came around the corner, if he saw you, he'd go toot toot, you know, and recognize you, and then he'd blow the hell out of the whistle for
the crossing.
And so he'd stop the car you were supposed to get on.
Do you remember what it cost to go to Middletown on a train?
I don't remember, Si. It used to be 10 cents.
On a trolley.
2 5-cents on a trolley. To go to Middletown, and it probably was the same or close to it on the train.
Yeah.
But it was a handy way. We used to go to Middletown all the time on the train because it came at noon, you know. And my mother would have a stop at the railroad station. We'd hop on and go to Middletown and do what you had to do. And she'd pick it up on the way home because we liked to ride on the train. You know?
Sure.
You hear the whistle? I like to hear the whistle too. So anyway.
Now when I came along, there was the bus.
Yeah.
From the train to the trolley that you remember.
Yeah.
And then they ran the bus, it stopped at the same place with the bus. It never crossed the tracks.
No.
And then the bus went out at the end of the day.
Yeah. I went to school on the trolley.
So we went on the bus.
I think it could at 24 or 25, say, the trolley. Anyway, old John would never fail. He was always on time.
Like the pot under the bench.
Yeah. Right, never was late, never was early. Always at the right time. John was there. And he'd come down to the post office and he'd come in and John say, I mean, my grandmother would say, John, you're a little late this morning. Now, Ella, goddammit, you know that train went by late. She says, you heard it going by. He says, you know it was late. He says, well, what are you going to be held for? And then he would laugh.
Play games with him.
He would laugh.
Yeah.
And then when he got to the post office, he waited until the mail was assorted at the post office. And then he took it to the mail that was going to Lyman Farm, to Mills's, to the gun site. And that included all the people that lived around there.
Well, Turtle and Burnham had a box of
pigeonholes
in their store for all the neighbors.
Yeah, because most people didn't have any transportation.
So John would do this.
John would sit there and wait, and most of the time, Grammy would have a cup of coffee for him on the back porch. In the wintertime, she had to let him in. He
must smell
pretty high.
Huh? Yeah.
But every Saturday night, Si, my grandmother, God bless her, had a pot of beans or a scallop, a dish, you know, macaroni and cheese or something.
Casserole type thing.
And usually if it was beans, they had a loaf of brown bread to go with it and what have you. And John would say, Ella, he says, I love you to the bottom of my feet. And he says, I'm going to look, he says, as long as I live, he says, I'll love you. And he says, after I go to heaven, I'll still look for
Isn't
you.
He appreciated that.
And, yes, he did. He certainly did. And he was always and forever, especially at Christmas time. He bought Grammy Jenkins the biggest 5-pound box of chocolates that he could get, and the best, not cheap chocolate.
Yeah.
And then during the... During the year, he would bring her little things, some plants or some flowers or something that he picked
up. You have fond memories of John Bickford.
Oh, yes. Oh, very. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. John was a nice man. John was a nice man. And I got one more story about, and all the kids all loved him and they all helped him, you know. Like, he'd go, hey, and John would have 12 kids. And John was no dummy. He let the kids help, too, you know. But he would pay them.
He would?
Yes, he would. Yeah. And Jimmy Fowler, Mickey Fowler, you know, was his favorite.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ, he thought the world of John.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lester would go over there when he lived in Camp's house.
Yeah.
And he would talk, not too much, say, I'll just give me about half, that's all. That's fine, thank you.
I think we should let people know this is juice that we're drinking.
None of their goddamn business. And everybody in town liked John.
Yeah.
And he was, I think, the most honest man that I ever met. John was an honest man.
See, by the time I knew him, he was an old man.
Yeah.
He had very few teeth left in his
head. Oh, God,
stutter like a...
chew tobacco. Oh, God.
But he thought the world of that horse, too.
He'd chew tobacco on one side of his mouth, he'd eat a sandwich on the other. Yes, that horse. Oh, yeah. Well, I got one more little story I want to tell you, sorry, about John Bickford. John's cousin, moved to East Hartford, or Glastonbury, or something.
From Utica?
No, no, from here.
Oh, he had when a cousin left here?
Yeah, Slocum.
Oh, Slocum was his cousin.
Yeah.
I thought he was just a fellow that came
No, 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 he was a relative. And Slocum, when he left my grandfather, went up to East Hartford or someplace.
The tobacco.
Working the tobacco for his grower, Goodrich or somebody.
Yeah.
And automobiles were getting pretty popular about this time. And Slocum kept asking John, he says, to come up and see him, spend Sunday with him, and have Sunday dinner. So John said that the first chance he got, the weather was right, he'd do it. So one Sunday morning, John got up bright and early and signed up the old horse and got the carriage fixed up.
Headed for East Hartford?
And they headed for East Hartford. By going to Hyde, there was no way to get across, only in Middletown and go up through Portland, but John didn't know that. He went up through Hartford and went over Memorial Bridge, you know? I don't mean Memorial Bridge, Founders Bridge, up in East Hartford, where the automobile row was.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, John is going across the bridge, you know, and horns are blowing, and traffic is tied up right halfway back to Meriden, and John is riding right along, smoking his old pipe, and neither paying anything, and all of a sudden a motorcycle comes roaring up by him and told him to pull over. John says, what do you want me to pull over for? He says, I'm going to see my friend, my cousin, Clay Slocum in East Hartford. And he says, you're just detaining me. And he says, well, you've got to get that rig off the road. Well, John says, what the hell do you think I'm doing? He says, I'm going as fast as old Nancy will go. He said, and the cop said, well, don't get flip with me, and so on and so forth. And John says, you don't know a hell of a lot about horses, do you? And the guy says, you know, the cop says, you got to hurry along. John says, you don't know a hell of a lot about horses, do you? And the guy, I guess, agreed with him. So John says, I'm not going to hurry old Mary Bell any more than she's going. He said, it's a hot day, and there's no sense of getting all sweat up. And the cop says, well, you got automobiles back here 14 miles. Well, John says, I ain't bothering them. And he says, all they got to do is go by. He said, I'm telling my own. So the cop says, well, either you get across there, or he says, we're going to arrest you. John says, good. He says, I'll be fine. He says, if you arrest me, you got to arrest my horse. And the cop didn't know what to do with him.
Get this guy out of here.
They finally let him go. And so, and John says, and don't get all excited about this, but he said, probably about 4 o'clock, half past 3 or 4 o'clock, he says, I'll be coming back the other way. But I think he went through Portland.
I hope so. That would have been a better ride for him.
John says, that goddamn whippersnapper cop, he said, what the hell did he know about a horse?
Can you imagine starting out from here Sunday morning going to East Hartford?
Yeah, but he didn't take anything of it.
No. Did people do that nowadays?
Well, sure. In my time, I remember going to the shore in a horse and wagon, down to Hammonasset, yes sir, over the old Black Rock Road, what is now 79.
Yeah.
Jesus, there were rocks bigger than this car in a road. You know, they had to build a road around them.
Yeah.
All sand. Oh, God, it was terrible.
So sand on the road, you mean dirt road?
Yeah, all dirt. All sand road.
Sand. Yeah.
And, but, there's one thing more I want to say about John. And old John got sick. And they had to take him to the hospital. And old John loved him. Oh, he thought this was just great. He said, he says, I get my breakfast in bed, he says, and the nurse says, wash me, he says, I don't even have to wipe my face or nothing.
Can you imagine when he went in the hospital and they looked at him and he had to scrub him down? God,
and of course, Henry, at that time, was the director of the Middlesex Hospital, you know.
Henry Lyman?
Henry Lyman, oh yeah. And of course, he had John in there in 2 minutes, and because John was a respected employee. John did a bitch of a job, Cy, but he never would miss one little damn screw, for Christ's sake. There wasn't a 32nd of an inch in diameter, you know, not at all. He wouldn't miss
one. Was he running the chips separated
the
chips?
Yeah, sure.
That's a dirty job.
And all of the product dropped into the chips.
Well, he would separate the product from the chips, too.
Yeah, at the same time. He put them in, he had big iron metal trays. And he'd put it down. And he'd have to take those chips apart, piece by piece.
No wonder he was so filthy.
Oh, sure. He had to take those chips apart, side to get those little bitty screws.
Yeah.
You couldn't just pick up some and shake it. Mm-hmm. No, they were stuck in there, you know. John never missed a one.
Yeah.
No. Old Carter would have the account, the count on those pieces. And by God, they would find him in old John. He might work 2 days and get a half a snuff box full of screws. You know,
tiny,
yeah. Sure. But every one of them was worth 50 cents a piece.
Yeah, right?
Sure. They sold those little things and to go in a 50 cents a piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Among them, plenty of others.
Yeah. Well, did John die in the hospital?
John died in the hospital, yeah. And
we just changed over onto this tape. And it's still 5/23/84. We're in business.
But John, I'm glad that I know him. It was a pleasure to know the old guy. And he brought lots of color to Middlefield.
Yeah.
And everybody and his brother knew him.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a train man that came by here.
Well, I'll bet not, yeah.
That didn't have a big wave for old John, you know. And he'd be standing right there waiting.
Yeah.
And so John was really a nice old guy, and we think of him as a character, but
yeah.
He was still a very nice person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, I guess, is...
That's good.
Oh, the nurses, I forgot. In the hospital side, the nurses raised hell. Oh, they had more fun than John, you know. He could take a joke.
Yeah. And
he was nobody's fool. He would raise hell with those nurses, and they loved it, of course. Oh, geez, they thought it was great. And John died, and he left quite a sizable chunk of money.
He did.
Yeah, and it went to the cousin and his children in East Hartford. Yeah, yeah, and their children were pretty well grown up. By that time, but
yes.
John had a will.
He did. John had no other family up in Utica.
Apparently not.
Yeah.
No. And I don't think that John ever knew where he came from. I mean, I don't think he had
And he was adopted, or?
I don't know. But he never talked of his family. Never. Only he had a cousin slave. In East Hartford.
Yeah.
Slocum. Clay Slocum.
Yeah.
And
was
so,
John an old man when he died?
Yes, he was.
I remember him as being an old man, but of course I was only a kid then, and anybody that was 50 looked old.
Yeah, I would say that John was away into his 70s.
Yeah.
Possibly in his 80s.
Could be. It's hard to tell.
And he worked every day.
He did, right up to the time he was sick.
Yeah. Right up until he got sick.